It's 15 minutes late.
The committee would come to order, please. This is the Senate State Affairs Committee. It is Tuesday, May 3rd, approximately 3:45 in the afternoon. We have one bill for consideration today. We've had previous hearing on House Bill 215. And there are just some questions. Let's see. Representative Roakberg, did you want to testify? I was not here when the bill was first heard. I'm not sure whether you testified at that time.
Well, I did very eloquently, Mr. Chairman. Okay. I read the record, but I tried to defer to the experts.
I'll do better. I'll play back the audio.
don't bother, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Hey, let's see. We do have Mr. Baldwin with us today. When I met with folks from the Permanent Fund earlier today, I wanted a little bit of information on the regulatory process that would be used for the setting up of this new system. And so, Mr. Baldwin, I understand you've put this together. If you'd come forward and walk us through this, please.
Yes, thank you. My name is Jim Baldwin. I'm with the Attorney General's Office.
So, the bill would tip off a regulatory process that I believe is abbreviated. It's a mirror of an existing system that applies in other agencies. So,
yes, sir. It's very close to the process that's in effect in the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority and the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. These are enacted in law, and at the time that they were enacted, those corporations made the case to the legislature that they needed to be more nimble than the regular line agency in adapting to market conditions, being in the housing market or in the secondary mortgage market that ADA is in, and that therefore they needed an abbreviated adoption process. I prepared a comparison between the regular AS-4462 regulation adoption process and the process that would be proposed here in HB 215 finance. Basically, the differences are in amounts of time that it, for public notice, and then the amount of time that it takes a regulation to become effective once it's filed. There is another significant difference in that there's no approval by the Department of Law, review and approval by the regulations attorney. They're just effective upon filing with the Lieutenant Governor's office. Of course, our office is very closely involved with the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. I would imagine our office would be also deeply involved in drafting of the regulations. So it's not that the a permanent fund corporation would be escaping Department of Law review or involvement.
Okay. Do members have questions? Thank you. And Mr. Burns, could you come forward? We had some discussion in my office today about the types of additional investment opportunities you're trying to get to, and also, let's see, in the leaving the packet here, the document that you had. It's in my office. If you maybe just want to go over this.
I'd be glad to, Mr. Chairman. In your packet on page 4, we have this graph with the red and blue arcs. These are both the depictions of what are referred to as the efficient frontier. The axis, the horizontal axis across the bottom, is a measure of risk as stated in standard deviation. The vertical axis on the left are historical rates of return. The blue line that goes across is the efficient frontier of the permanent funds options today under the statutory list. The large blue square that has next to it March 2004 was the asset allocation that the trustees made at that point in time. That same allocation was just renewed at our meetings Thursday and Friday of this week, so we did not make any change for this year. The various points, as I said, along that arc are just depictions of different mixes of assets, and that's how how the line is created. The red line above that is what an efficient frontier would look like if unconstrained by the statutory list. And again, those points along the line are different asset mixes. What I think is important about this is if you look at the blue square and the green square, the green square gives us almost exactly the same return and ratchets back our risk about three points of standard deviation. Or in the alternative, keeping the risk at exactly the same place when you go from the blue square up to the reddish square, you can pick up that much additional return for the same amount of risk. So I think this to me defines what the current statutory list is holding us back from. As I mentioned before, there are 44 of the 50 states have adopted the prudent investor rule. Statutory lists have just gone away rather dramatically across the country.
Okay. And after the conversation we had earlier today, I was thinking about if you remove the statutory list so you have the full universe of investment options, and I believe what you're precluded from right now is some of the more aggressive investment options. I'm not sure. I can understand how you could jump up to the red line, but I guess I don't understand by availing yourself of riskier investment options how you lower the risk. That's the one thing that from our earlier conversation I didn't quite understand.
Let me give you an example, and then I'll try to walk you through a more specific example. In the small cap area, we just recently got rid of one manager at about $550 million. Small cap has some peculiarities in that it's what we call a capacity constrained area. These are smaller investment firms. They may do a great job with $300 million under management. They get to $500 or $600, they don't have the staff, they don't have the systems, so they just close their doors. So in an area like small cap where you have capacity constraints, and the math is also showing us that more ideas are better in small cap. That's not necessarily the case in all asset classes. So we got rid of the one manager at $550 million and hired nine at $60 million, or a little over $60 million apiece. And I would tell you, across those nine, certainly a third and maybe half of them, we would not have hired on their own. But we like the way they fit in to this breadth of approach to the small cap marketplace. It gave us enough ideas and enough lack of correlation between what they're doing, and that is the key, is trying to get investments that don't correlate with each other. It's a little more sophisticated way of saying, using the word diversification, but I guess if you use the baseball terminology, try to hit them where they ain't. It's that balance that you try to get and have assets moving in different directions. Higher risk investments, and we're not talking high risk, but higher risk investments, uncorrelated, can give you a portfolio that has less risk, and that is how the portfolios are managed today, as a portfolio, not as an asset class or an individual ownership.
So it's the blend of risks that comes down.
Precisely. Mr. Chair.
Additional questions?
No.
Senator Huggins.
Hedging. Is that an investment strategy employee?
Hedging?
Right.
Through the chair, Senator? Yes, it is. One of the things we might utilize would be an absolute return strategy, which would be we might replace some of our fixed income. And those basically are hedged assets where you really lock in a percentage. Actually, in today's marketplace, with some of these absolute returns, you can get a higher return, slightly higher return than fixed income, but you don't have the risk, the market risk, of rates going against you and losing principal. So that's a type of asset that that we might look to. I don't think you're going to see different types of assets that dramatic at all in what we want to do. I think you'll see combinations, long, short strategies of hedged positions. But it's
the prudent investor, does it hedging more or less important than your present practice?
Through the chair, I don't know if I would say it's more important.
It's more part. It's a greater part of the strategy, or is it more or less?
That would be determined. I mean, I think that's going to be how you how the market reacts, what in what market conditions. I think one of the things that's probably the most important about the statutory list is its lack of responsiveness to changing market conditions. And so it's a little difficult to answer your question exactly, but it's that changing market condition that that we need to be ready to move with.
One more question, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Does prudent investor require you to be more or less or maintain the same degree of financial agility?
Through the chair, Senator, you know, I would like to read you something just in, directly on that because I think it's important. We use the terminology, the prudent investor, because it's widely known in investment circles. It's the standard that is used at ASPIB. It's basically the standard that is that's used throughout the country. What we actually have in this statute, it says the prudent investor. The wording is actually the prudent expert. So we have ratcheted this up one level further. And just say, the prudent investor rule shall be applied by the corporation. The prudent investor rule, as applied to investment activity of the fund, means that the corporation shall exercise the judgment and care under the circumstances then prevailing that an institutional investor of ordinary prudence, discretion, and intelligence exercises in the designation and management of large investments entrusted to us. So it doesn't say an ordinary individual of prudence. It's an ordinary
investor.
Institutional investor. So we've moved that standard up.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Senator Elton.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And this is maybe a naive question. I mean, is the prudent investor rule is it different for real estate than it is for equities?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, no, the process of being prudent might very well be different. I mean, how you'd go about it, I mean, it's a different thought process.
Is it?
Prudent investor is a process. You know, whether, and the equity investigation process is different than real estate, which tends to be more yield driven. But you know, there are value things there, intrinsic values. Each asset class has its own process, and I think that's what's important to us is that we have a process that, not just that our managers have. I mean, I wouldn't want you to lose sight that, you know, probably the most important thing that we do, whether we are trustees or staff or whomever in this process, is to manage the managers and to find the best people we can all over the world. And we literally do have the best people all over the world. This is considered a very plum assignment and one investment managers covet to put on their resume.
So if I could follow up. So the standard that you apply to real estate while you're trying to measure prudence, it may be a different recipe than you would use when you're applying it to an investor who's managing a stock portfolio?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, you want the best real estate manager, you want the best equity manager, but they approach their product entirely differently. And the market, you know, at different times you know, gives you something in that marketplace. There are, you know, the real estate market today is very expensive, but, you know, the question is, can you afford not to be in it? I mean, it's we're a long-term investor, so, you know, but it's you swallow hard, you know, looking at some of the prices today. But if you're investing so much each year and trying to, you know, have a level approach, you know, it works over time. I don't think I'm answering your question exactly, but it's
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure I know how to ask the question. I guess what I'm trying to get to is that the provisions of this bill will apply equally to your real estate investment portfolio, although the way you measure may be different.
Through the chair, Senator Elton, yes, absolutely. Thank you for helping me through that.
I probably wasn't all that clear. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Do we have further questions? Seeing none, we do have the 1-0 fiscal note. And Mr. Burns, as I indicated, there are some other members of the Senate that have questions. They feel I have spoken to people, and I think there's a comfort level that they'll continue to press on those questions as the bill moves up to finance. And a number of members are going to be looking to Senator Steadman and Senator Seekins for a final opinion on the bill before it moves to the floor. So just so you're aware of that. So with that, what's the will of the committee? Senator Wagner?
I'd move CS for Senate, or for House Bill number 215, finance / G, with fiscal notes individual recommendations.
Is there objection? Seeing none, the bill will move up to finance. And we are done for today.